This podcast contains swearing and occasional disturbing content.
I don't need to live in this physical realm. I walk around in the physical realm. In the spiritual world is where I live. I exist in places you never even dreamed of. Strange.
Hello and welcome to the High Strangeness Podcast, episode 28. My name is Gav.
I'm Sam.
And we've got to the studio and we've had an issue with the microphones, haven't we?
Yes.
So I've had to pull a microphone out of my arse, literally out of my arse. Luckily I had one in a camera bag, a small microphone that I use for filming with at times, and luckily I had this so we could record with this, and you have my normal microphone, and your lovely microphone that you have is not here, so
yes.
You still sound pretty good, but not as good.
I am missing my other microphone though.
Not as good as Nerdy.
Formed a relationship with it now.
Yeah, it's not as good as Nerdy McGav here is going, I don't like the audio, it won't be good enough. Anyway,
there you go.
Sarah is a dedicated podcaster and entertainer and said to me, Gav, it does not matter. It does not matter. Let's just get out the entertainment and give everybody what they want.
Yeah.
So we're here with a case of a nasty serial killer. Serial?
Yeah, he is serial killer. Nasty piece of work. We'll just say this is going to contain like sensitive material, descriptions of the murders, and this guy's a piece of shit anyway, proper. So there's going to be some like child stuff in there, sexual assault and things like that along that line, so yes, viewer discretion is advised.
Okay, and I'm kind of going into this again with a
I don't really know about him that much.
No.
So yeah, so it'll be an interesting little ride along for you. But yeah, he's a dirtbag, honestly, and such a creep as well. If you see the pictures that I put on social media, he's so creepy.
Really?
Just so creepy. Looks awful. He's always looked like there's something wrong with him. So you can just imagine, as I go through it and start telling the story, you know, you can really get a good picture of what kind of person he is. He's such a scumbag. Just does not care. Will charm anyone, you know, and just get out of situations, and fucking is so sneaky. But he's fucking brutal as well. Like, it's horrible shit.
Right.
Really horrible shit.
Okay.
He's a cunt.
Brilliant. So is there a little bit of a warning on that then?
Yeah, just a bit.
We haven't really got much of an update of what's going on in the world. There is something strange going on in the world. I don't really know why and how, and didn't really know if I wanted to read into it too much, but Bill Cosby was let out of prison.
I wanted to know. I want to know why they've let him out.
I don't understand how they've overturned his conviction.
Bastard.
That's
just horrendous.
It makes no sense.
No, not at all. What he did was fucking horrendous.
Why
should be behind bars until he fucking pegs it?
It's probably like one of those really silly things, which is like a very old and thing they've put down and been for so many years.
Found some shitty loophole where it's just fucking got out of.
But
out on a technicality.
Weinstein at first was probably like, you bastard in there. Because apparently, I think they might think it might apply for Weinstein too.
Oh, you're joking.
I don't think change it quick. It can't happen though, because like the uproar, Weinstein caused more of an uproar socially than Cosby, I suppose.
Even though it's more prolific, maybe. I'm not sure how many people Bill Cosby actually assaulted, but I think it was quite a lot. But I'm sure Weinstein did more.
I don't know.
But at the same time, it shouldn't even matter. You know, they both, even if they did both did that to one person, they should still be locked up for it and not be allowed to be fucking out in the world among other people, because they're fucking dangerous. They're predators.
Well, yeah, because I don't doubt they think, oh, Bill Cosby over the past however long he's been there has all of a sudden rejuvenated into this.
Yeah, I mean, he must
great
be pretty,
pillar of society.
He must be pretty old by now anyway, so I'm not so sure he's going to get away with that kind of shit, but it doesn't matter, you know, he needs to pay for what he's fucking done.
Yeah, I agree.
Ruined other people's lives, you know, why not have his life ruined?
Yeah,
fuck
totally.
Him. Fuck him, fuck this guy, fuck Weinstein.
Fuck them all.
Yeah, fuck them all, lock them up. Fucking dig bags.
Nasty people.
Yeah, and all, totally. And all predators.
And all thinking with their penises.
Yeah.
Each one of them.
Definitely.
If they didn't have sex in the brain,
yeah,
probably wouldn't have happened. No, no, Weinstein would have actually still manipulated people because of his power.
This is it. I was going to say, what we say a lot of the times is it's not always a case of the sex, you know. Like this guy, I suppose, like back in the day in the 70s when he was kind of in his heyday, people could probably look at him, you know, average person would probably look at him and go, fairly handsome. In a Ted Bundy kind of way. Not me personally. I think he looks like a fucking creep. But, you know, generally, they might go, yeah, you know, I'll fuck him on a night out, maybe, one night stands. I'm sure he could have got sex if he wanted to.
Yeah.
But it's just a power issue.
Yeah.
You know, this guy's clearly a fucking sociopath and a narcissist, and it's the power over people that he gets off on, hence why he's doing shit like this to, like, younger kids.
Yeah.
Younger women.
Mm.
Because they're easier to manipulate, easier to control, you know. So a lot of the time it's the power, the sex is kind of secondary, or is an element of the power.
Same as paedophiles, though, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. You know, that's an element of the power trip in itself, is the sex. So yeah, I think they still would have done this because that's just the way they're thinking.
Okay, well, happy times going on there. Anyway, so yeah, don't know what the fuck, he's out of prison and what's going on there.
Yeah, totally. That's just fucked, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. Okay, so let's just jump fucking straight into this one then, yeah?
Okay.
You got a cat with you,
haven't you? I have. Jeremy's come to keep me company.
Okay.
No, she's not. She's leaving. She just scratched my leg on the way down. Okay, so today we're going to be talking about Rodney Alcala. So Alcala is a convicted serial killer and rapist, and his victim count is 8 known murders, but it could be as high as 130.
How can 122 be miscounted?
Because it's not that they're miscounted.
Or not miscounted, but miss...
Yeah.
Known.
Like, yeah, what's... kind of not really associated. It's because, as you'll see as we go through it, and I'll talk about it, but he used to photograph. He was a photographer for a job a lot of the time, and he always used to carry a camera around. So he's taken so many pictures of so many people that they can't, the police are having a hard time identifying it. And I do believe that you can still go online and view the photos that the police have uploaded, because it's people they're still trying to identify.
Oh, you're joking.
To see if they can match with the Jane Does and stuff, you know, that have come up on file, that have been found and no one can tell who they are.
Right.
He could, you know, all these people could be potential victims in the pictures. So the police have just been having to wade through, and I have got it in my notes, but I'll be telling you how many photographs and stuff they actually took when they raided his apartment. It's just insane. There's so many, you know. He took pictures of everyone, just trying to convince people that he was like a fashion photographer. And that was his thing. That was how he would lure people in.
It's like Bundy.
Yeah.
Using a bit of charm and a bit
Totally. That's
a bit of lies, a bit of bullshit.
That is what he got a buy on. Just bullshit, charm, you know, trying to be sneaky and shit like that. It's fucking insane. It's such a crazy story. But I find this guy doesn't really get much coverage. I think, you know, obviously we all know Dahmer, Bundy, Gacy, that kind of thing. I don't think this guy really pops up in the serial killer kind of thing. I've known about him for quite a bit.
Yeah, I don't
find him really fascinating.
Right, I don't really know.
Just such a, like...
He looks like a music producer.
Yeah.
From the 70s.
Such a crazy.
It's because he's got a Phil Spector look going on.
Oh, God, he was awful and all, weren't he? He was really
celebrity's
bad.
Gone wrong. I don't know, Phil Spector. I suppose Phil Spector would be a celebrity, even though he wasn't. He was a producer rather than an actual.
It's quite big back in the day, though. Public figure. It's quite a well known
producer. He produced the Beach Boys.
Yeah.
It's a Phil Spector sound. It's the wall of sound that Phil Spector created. He is quite clever with his mix.
Okay.
He can make a real sound of wall.
Yeah.
Sound of wall.
Sound of wall.
Fucking hell, what was that?
Sound of wall.
Right then, Sarah. I guess it's that time, isn't it?
Yeah, should we get into it?
Yeah, let's get all tucked under our covers, get a hot chocolate.
Make sure you've got your windows locked before you do that.
And the back doors.
This guy will make you think that. Is
don't want no one coming in our back door.
No. Stay back.
No slipping in my back door.
Yep.
Okay, go for it. Let's find out about this person. I'll just sit comfortably cross-legged like I'm, at first school again with everybody else.
Oh, Okay, so Alcala was born Rodrigo Jacques Alcala Bucor in San Antonio, Texas, to a Mexican-American family in 1943. And he's got two sisters and a brother. So in 1951, the family moved back to Mexico briefly to look after a sick and elderly grandmother. During this time, the father abandoned the family, but in all other respects, from what is known, Alcala had a normal childhood. In 1954, when Alcala was around 11 years old, his mother moved him and his siblings to suburban Los Angeles. During high school years, he was known as popular and well-liked, and he often dated. In 1961, at the age of 17, Alcala joined the US Army and served as a clerk. In 1964, after what was described as a nervous breakdown, he went AWOL and hitchhiked from Fort Bragg to his mother's house, arriving manic and distressed and saying that the army wasn't where he wanted to be. After some convincing from his mother, he finally turned himself in and was sent to a hospital in New York for a psychiatric evaluation. He was diagnosed as having chronic to severe personality disorder, characterised by a disregard for right and wrong, a lack of empathy for others, and an inability to feel guilt over his actions. And he was discharged from the army in February 1964. After leaving the army, Alcala graduated from the UCLA School of Fine Arts, and he committed his first known crime in 1968. So Donald Haynes was sitting in traffic on the way to work when he noticed 8-year-old Tally Shapiro walking alone on her way to school. He also noticed a beige car moving over towards her through the traffic. He continued to watch as the driver caught Tally's attention, asking her if he could give her a ride to school. She told him she wasn't allowed to talk to strangers and continued walking, but the driver persisted, eventually convincing her to get into the car. Haynes had found this suspicious. It was obvious that Tally was not familiar with the person who had been driving, and he decided to follow. It's good for that man. The car pulled up to an apartment complex and the driver, a tall man with bushy hair, got out, with Tally following reluctantly. After they both entered the apartment, Haynes rang the police from a phone box. When they arrived and knocked on Alcala's door, he peered through a curtain, asking the officer to wait as he'd just gotten out of the shower and needed to get dressed. The officer was suspicious as Alcala's hair was still dry.
No, I'm dressed, not in it. I'm just getting dressed.
Yeah. His hair was still dry, so he proceeded to break down the door.
Okay.
He found Tally lying on the kitchen floor in a pool of blood. She had been raped and viciously beaten and asphyxiated with a heavy iron bar which was lying on the floor next to her. Alcala, however, was nowhere to be found. Remember, this is like an 8-year-old girl.
Okay.
Fucking crazy. Initially, the police thought Tally was dead, but when they saw her taking shallow breaths, she was rushed to the hospital, and after receiving medical treatment, she survived. Alcala fled the state to avoid arrest, and federal agents placed him on the FBI's most wanted list.
This is all gone very quick. Like,
I know, it's escalated really quick. So he's done absolutely nothing until he goes in the army. You know, I don't know what happened in the army, because he wasn't even fighting.
Where was he? Where was he drafted?
I don't know where he was stationed to. But, he hitchhiked from Fort Bragg, didn't he? So is that's like an army kind of...
barracky place.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. Sorry, Americans, I don't really know much about that military stuff. But yeah, I think that's quite a major kind of military... station, but he was only working as a clerk. He wasn't even fighting.
Right.
So something's happened there, you know, and he's gone AWOL, he's hitchhiked back to his mum's house.
But
apparently he turned up in a right state, kind of going freaking out, going, oh, I don't want to be in the army, you know, it's not the place I want to be.
Was he bullied?
I don't know. I think, yeah, maybe.
Bullied or spiked with acid?
He got the beats or something.
I'm gonna say bullied. I reckon he bullied, got beaten, yeah. But why would that happen? He's done nothing.
It's escalated really quickly. Yeah,
there's nothing as a child. There's nothing going on there.
There's nothing.
Right.
You know, his dad abandoned the family. That's all there is to it. But it sounds like his mum kind of had it together. You know, she obviously moved the family around and was looking after her mum and stuff when she got ill in Mexico. But there's nothing in his childhood. There's no head injuries. You know, there's no abuse. There's nothing like that to speak of. So it's it escalates really quickly, you know, and that's the first... For him to do that, I don't know. It makes me think, is there shit that he never got found out for, you know, before he did that? Because it's unusual for murderers and serial killers to just kind of escalate that much so soon.
Well, it's always the same thing, isn't it? The parental guidance, the head injuries.
Or hurting animals and stuff like and that. All, you know, just starting to see how is the best way of murdering, you know. And
yeah.
So, it escalates really fast.
Weird that it just does that. Like you say, though, there could be just stuff out there which isn't out there, which it's just not common knowledge.
Yeah, because he is quite sneaky, so there could easily have been stuff, you know, that he could have got away with.
But he's gone able.
Yeah, but then he hands himself in.
So he's deserted and gone able, and he's hitchhiked back home. He's gone to his mum. I'm going to be in the army, mummy. Okay, that's a weird one then. So I'm going with bullying, I guess. I don't know what else it could be, but it must have been bullying for a long period.
I don't know.
But he doesn't seem like a type who might be bullied, I don't know.
No, not really. Unless he did something weird and got the beats for it.
Now, that might be hitting more than nail on
and
the
head.
And
then he had to
There's
run
a
away
very good
because
chance
everyone knew
like
that he'd done something bad or weird.
It could be something like that. It could be something, you know, masturbation. But then, it's the army, though. Like, the odd guy's going to wank off the other odd guy once in a while. Do you know what I mean? It's not...
I don't know, but
it has to be something there. But that can be that traumatic that it's going to spiral you straight away, boom, into what, just going like this. That can't be. I would have gone like that, and then like something like literally like a few acid fucking bad trips or something.
Yeah,
do you know what
I mean? It could be that. You know, it's like around that kind of time anyway.
That's what I'm sort of going with. I don't know what else it could be to really push your mind that far that you could go ahead and do things. As we are as normal society members, and like, you don't go, the type of people like you and I are both, I've walked down the street with you, we've both walked down the street, I haven't seen you all of a sudden just start biting into someone's face.
Give it time.
So, like, you know, it just seems so weird that this is a thing.
Yeah. It's quite full on, like, really
like,
quick.
We know not to do that. Like, this guy probably must know not to do this, and all of a sudden be like, all bets are off.
Yeah, I mean, at the same time we're saying that, obviously, like, the rules are a little different for this guy. He's already been diagnosed with, like, a personality disorder. You know, and obviously, like,
and maybe that wasn't a big enough diagnosis. Maybe it's more there.
Yeah, lack of empathy. He doesn't feel guilt about what he's doing.
Okay.
You know, he doesn't give a shit about other people, really. He's already been diagnosed with that before this happened, so we can't really sit here and go, in comparison to us, we have our issues, but we definitely haven't been diagnosed with a personality disorder. So, like, reality for him is completely different.
Yeah,
it's a little harder to understand.
And those traits that he has, you're saying just a moment ago, is different things. Pushing that into the army situation and still being adolescent and not really
and
knowledgeable
also,
as an older person.
Yeah, totally. Having that lack of respect for authority and stuff like that.
And being selfish and not respectful. Because it's the army, it's very much a team thing. You've
got
to look out for the person
who
has got your back, if you've got the back of the person
definitely.
In front of you. So maybe he wasn't a team player.
I shouldn't imagine that he was
so
at all.
So I would say it's a case of fuck this guy.
Yeah.
Just fucking give him shit and get him out of the army.
Mm.
Like, you're fucking getting out of here. We don't need you because
you
haven't got our back.
Like,
we can't trust you.
Hard for
get the fuck out of here. I bet that's how it was.
Yeah.
And he probably did that to himself.
Yeah, I should think so. Just through the kind of person he was. Because as you know, as I go on and you'll see, he is just totally in it for himself and whatever he can get out of other people, you know. He is that guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah. But yeah, it's a bit of an escalation.
Okay, well... Yeah, okay, cool. That's nice to get. I just needed a point to stop you of that. So we can
really
touch
fine.
About that childhood thing. Because that's normally our... What's our stepping stone? It's where we get to start with these things before we get onto it. Also, it's really good to know where they're coming from to go into this.
Yes.
But very interesting that we haven't, or we don't know of, anything previous or head injury or anything which is a massive shock to the brain or blah, 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 which causes all these kids. It's very interesting that this is a first.
Yeah, I think it is.
For us?
I don't know. No, I'm sure there was someone else we were talking about and there was no discernible issues in childhood.
Could have been.
Was it Golden State Killer?
Yeah, he wasn't too bad, was he?
I don't. I think he was fine during childhood.
I think
stuff.
You might be
I don't
right
think
on
there was anything.
But generally,
that went on. But yeah, as a rule,
that is what we get. So
that
it
is
a very rare
for serial killers. But it does happen. Some people are just like that, you know.
Okay.
That is just sometimes a thing.
So he's just gone and seen this 8-year-old child side the road, picked him up, got him in a car.
Yeah.
Gone to a hotel, and this dude's just been
gone
like,
to his apartment.
Oh, to his apartment, and this dude's just been like, the fuck?
Yeah,
you know, like, an 8-year-old child should not be just getting into that car.
He was in traffic, you know, it wasn't like, it was quite slow moving traffic, so he had time to see Alcala moving his car over from one side, you know, cruising over to the pavement. He'd obviously spotted the little girl.
Hmm.
So this dude's sitting there in traffic, he's got time to watch this. You know, and he's obviously can see that she's suspicious. She doesn't know him.
Mm.
So, yeah, good for that guy.
Yeah. Okay. So the police have busted down. And this is this first thing.
This is the first known crime.
Okay.
Of
caught
Alcala.
In the act.
Well, he was, but he legged it.
But the cops already got a look of the guy then, but they just don't know who he is.
Yeah.
Right.
So Alcala's out of there. By the time the dude busts the door down, Alcala's out of there.
Well, if you were going to start a movie, that's your starting point right
there. Yeah, totally.
That's your introduction.
Yeah. I'm surprised no one's made a film of him, to be honest.
Mm. Okay, then.
Maybe you could do it.
I don't really want to. I don't really want to
film
it. No,
honestly, this guy's fucking horrible.
Okay, dear, can
like,
you sit down there? Just lie down and we're just going to pour this blood on. It's fake blood. Don't worry. He's like, I don't want to recreate such a thing.
It's not a pleasant story.
No.
Okay, so using the alias John Berger.
Brilliant.
Which is B-E-R-G-E-R.
Please, did he use the alias middle name Cheese?
Brilliant. Or ham.
Amazing.
So using the alias John Berger, he enrolled in the New York University Film School and studied under director, producer and fellow paedophile Roman Polanski.
Really now?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Apparently Polanski himself taught him how to use a camera.
Shit the bed.
So there you go.
Fair enough. That's a, yeah.
P-Day connection.
Yeah, Polanski, the famous case where he was also a photographer and was doing a photo shoot with some young ladies. And one young lady, persuaded her to take off more than should be. And I think she's 14, maybe 15.
God.
I think it's 15, maybe. And he was old. He was old enough to know better.
Yeah.
You know. And then persuaded her to, gave her champagne and drugs and persuaded her to get into bed. And then someone banged on the door. There's another actress, can't remember who it was.
But Angelica Houston.
That's it. And she was demanding what was going on in there, etc., etc., blah, 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 blah. And eventually, I think, broke into the door and was in bed with her or something like that.
Go on, Angelica.
Hmm.
I hope she gave him some shit.
Yeah, probably. And
I can imagine she would. She's quite a...
And
forthright woman.
Polanski had to get out of town and out of the country, and he's never returned since.
So he should.
He's stuck where he is, and they're trying to still extradite him back to the States.
Are they?
I've been trying to extradite him, but like get him there for years.
Okay.
He's like, nah.
What a dick.
I know. Really, there should be some world law where it's like all countries come together for certain things and say, like, you did that, get the fuck over there and sort it out. We don't want to. It's kind of like, I say, you're one of us. We'll just look after you. No, get the fuck out then. You did it.
Yeah.
Take your fucking.
Yeah, totally. Pedo shit and any kind of sexual assault stuff.
Otherwise, what sort of message does that give to people?
Yeah, definitely.
You know?
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, pretty old fella now. 80s, I think, maybe. Late 70s, early 80s, I think Polanski is.
Disgusting.
And unfortunately, I still like some of his movies.
I know, I do too.
I like
Rosemary's
Baby.
Gate. Is one of my favourite films ever.
Yeah, I really like Ninth Gate.
The Tenant is really good as well.
Tenant's
That's
okay.
A super good movie.
Yeah, so, and Repulsion's okay.
I know, it's so hard though, isn't it? Fucking.
Yeah.
To kind
it's
of,
where you
I
have to
know,
put the arts on the side of the. But how far do you go of that? I don't want to listen to. reruns of Jimmy Savile's radio show.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, it's like, how far do you go with it, I suppose?
At what point do you draw the line?
Yeah.
But then again, you have a thing like a movie, though. It's made of multiple of hundreds of cast and crew. It's just that Polanski happens to be his name as director, and it's just the way it is. Where Jimmy Savile, that is an individual with a production team behind him, but mainly him, you know.
Yeah.
So I guess that's where you go. I don't know. That's where you look at it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Tricky
situation.
I'll be
right. I'll be wrong. You know.
Yeah.
Listeners, let us know. What do you think?
Yeah.
Do you still follow the art of convicted people?
Yeah.
You know, do you do that, or do you go, no, fuck you, I'm not doing it now? Like, have you stopped listening to Marilyn Manson?
Yeah.
You know, all these sorts of things.
I think I've listened to him.
But he's not convicted, though.
No.
So.
I think I've listened to him once since all that stuff came out. I did feel naughty listening to it. It's so sad.
You did take your picture down in the living room, though.
I did, but I did and replace it with Albert Fish.
You replaced it with a convict, a child killer. I don't know if
I've swapped that for worse.
I don't know.
I don't know where my logic is. What are the choices? This is my house here. What are the choices in my house? I've got no, like, live, laugh, love.
A picture of a pink teddy bear or something.
Ain't got that shit. I've got pictures of cannibals and murderers.
I know you have. Right. Get on with it.
Okay, so in the summer of 1969, Alcala applied for and was accepted as a counsellor at the New Beginnings Arts and Drama Camp for Girls in rural New Hampshire.
How long is this after this?
Can you believe it? So this is 1969. So it was 1968 when he did that.
Literally a year later.
Yeah.
And he's just escalated into.
He's just launched himself into this. He has just springboarded off into the world of sexual assault on young girls.
And this first girl, she never died. She survived.
She's alive.
She's still alive in the world.
She is alive.
Well, as far as we can imagine.
Yeah.
So he just literally, was it driving along and opportunity?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Not it's obviously calculated, is it?
I hate to compare him to a shark because sharks are fucking awesome. But he is a predator, just swimming around looking, you know, and he's just going to spot.
That's a really good way of looking at it.
Spot his little
prey and just go for it.
His little niche, you know, like he spotted Tally, the little girl, side of the road. Right, go for it. He's gone, job at a summer camp for girls. Nice.
Mm.
You know, New Hampshire. No one knows me out there. He's using a different name at the moment as well. He's got an alias going. So, he's just spotting his opportunities. And he's in there. You know, and because he used his charm, he could do that shit.
Yeah.
But so, yeah.
Crazy. But so he's just gone to young girls.
Yeah.
A child's just the weakest of strength wise and physically, mentally. It's like it's just,
well, he's kind of like with his photos and stuff, you know, it was wide ranging. It wasn't just little girls, it was smaller girls. Obviously that little girl was 8 years old, you know, anything upwards up to about early 20s, mid 20s, I'd probably say.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of age range. But his photos included pictures of boys as well. But he didn't kill any boys. He only killed girls and young women.
Well, there's got to be something there. So that's got to be something to do with mum.
Yeah.
Has to be.
Maybe.
Mum and dad. Has to be something there. There's another story behind there which we don't know about. Of his childhood. Absolutely.
Yeah.
With the mum and dad, I'd say. I'm not trying to judge book box cover in any sense, but...
Yeah.
Okay, so he's just done that. So he's gone and got a job at a summer camp.
Yeah.
A la Friday the 13th, Crystal Lake.
Yeah, kind of. This is like an arts and drama camp.
Fuck's sake.
For young girls, specifically.
And he's probably just charmed his way in there, gave some fake credentials.
And he's also
pre-internet, obviously.
He's using a slightly different alias now of John Berger still, but it's B-U-R-G-E-R.
Jeez.
Where last time it was B-E-R-G-E-R.
Oh.
So he's just changed a letter.
Wow. Where could him go?
I know. So, you know, he's scoped into film school with one name. Now he's scoping into this summer camp, so he's making himself untraceable because he's changed, obviously changed that name. He's made it a different name, you know, so he's not going to be connected with anything else. You know, obviously, if they've gone through his flat with the Tali Shapiro case, the little girl, the first one, they're going to find stuff in the name of Rodney Alcala. So now he's operating under three different names already.
It's a very Bundy-esque thing, isn't it?
Is it? I'm not sure. Did he change his name?
I thought Bundy did some different name aliases.
I don't know. He might have done.
He was very much in costume, though, wasn't he?
I don't know a great deal about Ted Bundy.
Even though so many films about him.
Yeah, I know, but he's never really been a big thing for me. Although I know he was quite a vicious killer.
Mm.
You know, there was some quite bad murders. But
there's a movie.
He's never really been an interest to me.
There's a film called Ted Bundy, and I think it's Thingamajiggy does the special effects. Tom Savini.
Mm.
It's pretty gruesome though for
really?
The effects. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Mm. I've got. I think I still got a copy.
Oh, cool. We have to lend it to me.
I shall
indeed. I like some Tom Savini stuff.
Mm.
But yeah, I've never really been kind of into.
Well, I knew he did costumes, like just different things and stuff. A little bit.
Okay.
Okay. So different names. So did he make a film? Did he do anything with film?
No, it was mainly just photographs.
Oh, okay. Yes, Polanski was a photographer as well. So, like I was saying.
Yeah,
okay.
I think he did do a little bit of film, but nothing kind of notable, you know.
Just more for learning composition.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. So then he's then gone to this school, so camp, so he's probably taking the camera with him.
I would think
and
so.
And he's probably saying, oh, I'll take photos. Yeah. Da, 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 da. Right.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get back to...
Okay.
Let's get back to cheeseburger in the camp.
Okay, so two of the girls attending the camp went to mail some letters at the local post office one day. And while they were there, they noticed an FBI Most Wanted poster on the wall. Also noticing the suspect, one Rodney Alcala, bore more than a passing resemblance to their counsellor, Mr. Berger.
And this is because the cop saw him, yeah?
Do you remember? Yeah, because I said it was on the FBI Most Wanted.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
Obviously I've got his name and everything. You know, so now they've managed to
and the,
to get
and the cop
picture.
That saw him running over the window. My hair's drew my hair.
Yeah.
So did he just run, get out the back
he
bathroom
just
window?
Fucking legged it. Yeah, probably out the window. I don't know whereby he escaped, but I'm sure he went out the window somewhere.
Hmm. Okay.
Upon returning to the camp, they informed the dean what they had seen, and he visited the post office to see the poster for himself.
Do that again.
Okay. Upon returning to the camp, they informed the dean what they had seen, and he visited the post office to see the poster for himself. He immediately phoned the FBI to tell them of his suspicions, and they told him to return to the camp and act normal. The next day, FBI agents arrived at the camp and detained Berger. After his fingerprints matched those of Rodney Alcala, he was placed under arrest and extradited back to California. When he was interviewed, the detectives asked him about what had happened to Tali Shapiro, to which he replied, "Oh, I want to forget all about that. I don't want to think about the things that Rod Alcala did."
So this comes into the person, the disorder of different characters.
He's disassociated himself, hasn't he, from that?
Mm.
Which is quite weird.
Mm. Okay, so this has gone very quickly. I didn't think so early on.
Oh no!
You'd be going straight
into the
he's arrested. Boom, that's it.
Yeah,
it's not like
slippery character though. Honestly, he gets arrested and gets under suspicion and sneaks off, and it's so dodgy.
So there's a bit more of a story to that then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Because I was just like, yeah. So that's just his face is known now though. Mm.
Yes,
and straight away,
that
looks like our camp counsellor.
Yeah.
Gosh, imagine that, though.
On the FBI Most Wanted list.
For attacking a girl, and you're there as a girl going, "Oi, Janine. Yeah, Mary, what's going on? Look over here, look at this fella.
Don't he look like Mr. Burger?
Don't he look like Mr. Cheeseburger? Yeah, cheeseburger, that's funny. God, that must have been fucking terrifying. When they just sort of get someone else involved, say, "Hey, does that look?" And they're just like, "Fuck yeah," they're out, police, or the FBI, and whatever, come down. And then they actually take him, like, shit, we got off easy.
Yeah, definitely. What a close call.
Mm.
Fucking terrible. Okay, so unfortunately, Tali Shapiro's family, after being terrified by what had happened to their daughter, had moved to Mexico and did not want to come back to America to testify in a trial.
So
the only option available to the prosecuting attorneys was a plea deal. In 1972, Alcala pleaded guilty. His charges were reduced to child molestation and he received a sentence of 1 year to life, but was released after 34 months. The emphasis at the time being on rehabilitation, and Alcala had managed to charm the parole board into thinking he was well again.
So he's there for 2.5 years?
Yeah. For what he did to that little girl.
What the fuck?
I know. What is that? Fucked up. That girl's life must be fucking ruined.
Hmm.
In August 1974, Alcala was paroled to Los Angeles County, where he registered with the Monterey Park Police Department as a sex offender and moved in with his mother. He managed to land a job with a photography company, taking pictures in stores in South Los Angeles. On October 13, 1975, Alcala drove to a mall in Huntington Beach. He noticed a young girl waiting for a school bus, also seeing that her name was written on her school books, and he shouted out to her, "Hey Julie, I'll give you a ride to school if you like." At first she didn't answer, so he tried again. "I have some great posters to show you." She looked up and smiled, deciding it would be more fun to ride in a car to school than the bus, and she accepted his offer. He asked her how old she was, and she replied that she was 13, but most people thought that she looked younger. He introduced himself as John Ronald, and she told him her name was Julie Johnson. When they drove past her school, she told him that he could let her out now, but he continued to drive, telling her he just needed to check on an apartment and that it wouldn't take long. She began to shout and cause a fuss, to which he screamed at her to shut up. Julie attempted to jump out of the car, but Alcala grabbed her and locked the doors. He eventually stopped at a place near Huntington Beach, yanking her out of the car and telling her to sit on the rocks. He lit a joint and forced her to smoke it. She didn't want to, but she was now very frightened of Alcala, so she did as he said. When she passed it back to him, she deliberately dropped it, and as he bent to retrieve it, she tried once again to escape. She didn't get far as he grabbed her leg, pulling her up against him and forcibly kissing her, asking her, "Are you passionate when you're loaded?" Just fucking ugh. A park ranger noticed them and smelled the marijuana smoke. Coming over to the pair, he asked what they were doing. Alcala said they had been hiking and were just taking a break. Feeling safer, Julie told the ranger that Alcala had forced her to go there and she wanted to go home. The ranger arrested Alcala, putting them both in his car and driving them to the police station. Under interview, Julie told the police that Alcala had coerced her into going to the Bluffs. Meanwhile, Alcala told the police that he and Julie were friends, that the marijuana was hers, and that the trip to the Bluffs was her idea. The officers were uncertain who to believe.
Hang on. Coming from the guy who's been in prison for 2.5 years for attacking a young girl?
Yeah.
Who do we... Well, she might be lying. I'm got an idea that she's not lying.
Yeah.
And the convicted...
The guy who should know better person. Than to agree to that anyway, even if that was her idea. The guy who's old enough to go, "No, I'm not going to do that."
What the fuck? What the fuck?
Well, as I'm just about to tell you, the officers were uncertain who to believe, as they often encountered young girls in the company of older men in the area where the two had been picked up.
Who had been in prison for 2.5 years.
Yeah, but then there's also that. That shouldn't be a regular thing
shouldn't.
That you just let go. If you're often
at
encountering
all.
Young girls in the company of older men, up there where it's like it's kind of out of the way, you know, do they not find that suspicious?
Yeah.
Because that shouldn't be a thing that's happening.
No, it
you should
be.
Never be finding younger girls in the company of older men.
No, not really. No,
no not at all.
No.
It's fine. It's like, just... That shouldn't be a thing that you just let go.
This is ridiculous.
They ran background checks and Julie's came up clean, but Alcala, of course, as we were mentioning, he was still on parole, so he was charged with marijuana possession and violating parole and was taken back to jail.
Okay, so I jumped on the police's back before knowing that they didn't know the knowledge of his background.
You did, but at the same time,
I put my hand up. I put my hand
up. It shouldn't really be a thing that the police go, "Oh, well, you know, let's toss it up." who's right, who's wrong?
Yeah, not...
That shouldn't be an issue. It should just be like, this dude needs sorting out.
Yeah.
He violated parole again in December when he provided a minor with drugs and was given a 2.5-year prison sentence.
So he went to prison again?
Yep. He was released in 1977 with the requirement that he see his parole officer every week.
I was about to say, isn't it? Okay, but is this not, like, hang on, this guy's, like, repeat offending. Like, unless he's really, really proven how fucking better he is.
Yeah, surely he wouldn't.
Or is it a case of, we don't have enough space in jail, we have to just wait till he actually does something?
Like I was saying earlier, though, when they released him the last time, like, the emphasis at that kind of time was on rehabilitation of offenders. They wanted to get them back out into the world as soon as possible, I think.
But he's already...
But at the same time, you know, he's come at, what's that, like, 3-4 times now that he's kind of come up. But at the same time, when the police search the records, yeah, child molestation will come up. But I don't know if they'll... Will the details of the case come up so they can go, right, this is... Well, yeah, they'd know, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
They'd know everything about him.
Of course.
So, yeah, this is like 3 or 4 times now the police have picked him up.
Well, 3 times.
The same things.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been in prison and he's been picked up for the thing, which is not
it's
done anything wrong. He just says
girls.
He's kind of taken someone to where they haven't been and given them drugs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. But yeah.
It is.
They should be keeping more of a fucking eye on him.
Yeah.
Alcala used his charm to put himself into prosperous circumstances straight away. He was hired as a typesetter for the Los Angeles Times and took photos at weddings. And this is when he started doing his little photo thingy, you know, started collecting all the pictures of people, convincing them that he was a fashion photographer and he wanted to take their picture, and so just random people on the street.
Mm.
So, insanely enough, his parole officer allowed him to travel to New York, despite the fact that he was a repeat offender and also considered a flight risk. So they know, you know, obviously they've clocked on to the repeat offending. But yeah, he lets him go to New York. New York Police Department cold case investigators believe that a week after he arrived, he murdered 23-year-old Ellen Jane Hover, the goddaughter of Dean Martin and Sammy Davis Jr.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Her body was found buried on the Rockefeller Estate in Westchester County.
So her father was friends with those guys?
Yeah. On July 13th, 1977, Hover's boyfriend saw her talking to a man described as tall and thin, with long hair worn in a ponytail. Ellen told her boyfriend the man was a photographer and very charming. On July the 15th, she met the photographer for lunch, but didn't turn up to a dinner date with her parents in the evening. Receiving no answer to their calls, they phoned the police. When her apartment was investigated, nothing seemed out of place, but her diary was open, with one entry for July the 15th, John Berger, photographer. Her family hired a private investigator to find John Berger, and a reward was advertised. 11 months later, Ellen Hover's remains were discovered in a shallow grave. Her body was skeletal and had to be identified by dental remains and jewellery. A detective from the missing persons squad found her body after receiving a tip about Alcala. After the story had been covered by the media, a young girl called the squad to say that she had posed for photographs on the Rockefeller estate for a man named Alcala, and that the photo session had occurred almost exactly where the body had been found. In October 1977, 18-year-old Jill Barkham disappeared. Around a week later, she rang her parents to say she'd driven out to California with some friends and that she enjoyed it so much she was going to stay, while all her friends returned to New York. In the early morning of November the 10th, the police received a call about a body found in the vicinity of Mulholland Drive. The body of Jill Barkham was found posed on all fours. Her neck looked like it had been broken, and one of the legs of her pants were knotted tightly around it. She still wore a white sweater that was stained with blood, and a large pointed rock that was also blood-stained lay nearby. Her bottom half was naked, and her anus had been cut, and blood had pooled underneath her.
Oh.
The autopsy revealed that most of the injuries had occurred while she was still alive. Her face and body were so disfigured she needed a closed casket funeral. Also in 1977, when Georgia Wickstead did not show up to give her friends a lift to work and she couldn't be reached by phone, the police were notified and went to her Malibu apartment. There they found that someone had gained entry through the window and that the door had been left unlocked. When they entered the apartment, they were struck by a wave of heat, estimating the temperature at around 100 degrees. They eventually found a body and called in homicide. The body was on her back with her knees facing outwards and there was blood between her legs and her tights had been knotted around her neck as a ligature. A bloodied claw hammer lay beside the bed about 2 feet away. The autopsy revealed she had suffered massive trauma to the head and face and her skull had been fractured several times. Her neck bones and jaw had been broken and she had deep cuts to her vagina. Sperm was found in her vaginal, anal and oral cavities.
So he's got like an MO going on now with the force to the head.
Yeah.
Trauma. And tying with pants or tights, tying them up or whatever, or strangling them. Or...
And they also said as well about him, he used to strangle women just to the edge of like passing out and then he'd let them come back and then he'd do it again.
Right.
And that was part of his thing. He did that to everyone.
Right.
So he did it a couple of times, you know, would strangle them just to the edge and then let them come back. So it's definitely a power thing.
Yeah, who's in charge?
Yeah.
In charge of your life. Imagine that.
Yeah, totally.
Like,
he's just playing God, isn't he?
Or his version of a higher force.
Yeah.
Okay.
During the next few months, more young women were discovered raped and murdered. Alcala was questioned over the cases, but had an alibi each time. Although when the police interviewed him, they saw marijuana on his coffee table, so he was incarcerated for another 6 months. In December 1977, the LAPD were contacted by an FBI agent who was investigating the Ellen Hoover case. He was looking for a man named John Berger, B-E-R-G-E-R, due to the entry in her diary the day she went missing. Their records indicated that this was an alias used by Rodney Alcala, who had moved back to LA. It didn't take them long to track down Alcala, who had served jail time twice in the last 5 years and was currently on parole and was known to be working at the LA Times. They brought him in for questioning and found him surprisingly cooperative, telling the police that not only did he know her, but that he was also with her on the day of her disappearance, saying they had gone on a photographic excursion together and that he had left her outside her apartment. The police asked him to take a polygraph test, but he refused, and since they had no evidence to link him to the crimes, he was released.
Apart from his history.
Yeah, but that's all, like, circumstantial.
I guess it is.
I suppose there's no direct... evidence is there to go you're guilty.
It's not very creative, is it, having two aliases and just changing one letter?
No,
so it sounds exactly the same,
but I suppose it'd do, like, it's the least work that you need to do, just change a letter,
I guess, if he's a bit crap at remembering.
I know what you mean, but yeah, at the same time you don't have to remember loads of fancy names, do you?
I guess.
June the 26th, 1978 was Charlotte Lamb's birthday, but when her friends and family called to send her their best wishes, they went unanswered. Charlotte's sister called the LAPD to notify them that Charlotte was unreachable and that it was unusual. A detective visited her apartment on June the 28th, but received no reply when he knocked on her door, so he asked the manager to let him in, but nothing seemed amiss. Another tenant of the building visited the laundry room in the basement in the same month and discovered a dead female body, immediately informing the building manager, who in turn notified the police. When detectives visited, they saw the body positioned on her back, legs spread wide and surrounded by blood. A shoelace was tied around her neck, still attached to a shoe which lay at the side of her head. The medical examiner's findings were as follows. The head and face suffered massive trauma and the shoelace was tied so tightly around her neck that the assailant had fractured the cartilage around her larynx and thyroid. Bite marks were found on the right side of her neck and the anus had been bleeding from blunt force trauma and more than one method of strangulation had been used. Most of these injuries had been inflicted while she was still alive.
Same sort of thing
again
then?
Same thing again, yeah, definitely. In 1978, Alcala was bachelor number one on the TV show The Dating Game.
This is just
line
ridiculous.
Up, girls, line up.
So he's charmed his way into doing this.
It's insane. It's absolutely insane. Obviously, because they're looking for John Berger. They're not really looking for... They're kind of beginning to put the pieces together.
But the TV producers aren't going to look into his backstory. They don't need to.
You would. You would like to think that they would. And go, like, maybe we should check if any of these guys are rapists. You know, maybe we should check if any of these guys have fucking have been done for sexual assault before we send them out on a date with some poor woman.
Yeah, it's just absolutely ridiculous.
It's bonkers, isn't it?
But I guess they look at this guy, oh, he's quite charming. Oh, he's fairly good looking. Boom. Yeah. He looked good on camera.
Yeah, that's what they're thinking.
He looked good for the audience at home.
Yeah.
So you can imagine Bundy doing the exact same thing.
Yeah, definitely. Producers failed to background check the contestants, obviously, like we were just saying. Alcala was obviously already a convicted sex offender and he'd served time for marijuana possession, not that that's a massively bad thing, but there you go, and for supplying marijuana to minors, which is a bad thing. So that's him appearing on The Dating Game. Fucking crazy.
I can't believe
obviously,
he's...
Dating Game, in England we had Blind Date, didn't we?
Same principle, but in America.
Yeah, it's similar thing. So basically, if you're not sure what that is, I will post the video up on the Facebook page, and we're going to have a little listen in a second as well. But yeah, premise is, obviously, three guys behind a screen, and the lady comes out, and she gets to ask them a series of questions, and we'll pick someone to go on a date with based on how they answer. So that's the premise of the show. So Alcala's bachelor number one, and we're going to do a little listen to some of his answers now, which are just like,
that's just insane.
What the fuck? Anyway,
really?
I would not pick this guy. I don't know why she picked him based on his answers, and he sounds like a fucking creep as well. I wouldn't pick him.
All right, let's take a listen.
Okay.
That's the only time there is.
The only time? What's wrong with morning, afternoon?
Well, they're okay, but nighttime's when it really gets good. Then you're really ready.
I'm a drama teacher, and I'm going to audition each of you for my private class. Bachelor number one. You're a dirty old man. Take it.
Come on, over here.
Bachelor number one, I am serving you for dinner.
Oh.
What are you called and what do you look like?
I'm called the banana and I look really good.
Can you be a little more descriptive?
Peel me.
Wow.
I know, it's crazy, isn't it? Like, I would not pick someone that was giving that kind of answer at all. I'd be like, that is a creep. I will post that video. It's only like a 5-minute video because they've just cut in all his answers and stuff to that poor woman. And obviously, he does get picked.
He gets picked. Does he go on a date?
She picks him. She then refuses to go on a date with him. Because they got to know each other a bit better backstage and she said that he was creepy. She refused to go out with him. So good for that woman. She had a near miss and all, didn't she?
Wow.
I wonder where she is now.
Yeah.
Bless her. Well done for getting away from that one. Yeah. Fuck my life. Could have ended up fucking strangled that night.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
But imagine that, though. Imagine the TV show. Oh,
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, like, that they'd better have fucking checked their bloody people after that.
If that actually happened and he'd gone out and killed the date, that would
can you imagine?
Have been worldwide news.
Yeah.
And that sort of TV show. And those sort of TV shows would be, vigorously, like... Mm. And, you know, that show would have been pulled.
I bet they got rinsed already.
Mm.
Like, after it all came out and he got arrested,
yeah.
I bet they got fucking brought down. Crazy.
Yeah, you almost making this happen.
Yeah.
Getting them together.
Yeah, herding women towards him.
Crazy,
but
absolutely crazy.
Bonkers, isn't it? But yeah, I'll put that video up on the Facebook page.
And looking at the video of him, he is quite a handsome
Yeah,
fella, like, isn't
an
he? And he comes across
some kind of way.
You look at him just like that, and those things that you could be easily be at home watch this on TV and just laughing along to that.
Yeah, and go, oh, look at him.
Because you and I know the backstory of him.
He's a cheeky fella, isn't he? And like all that.
Because we know the backstory of what we just, you know. But if you were just literally that, yeah, be like, oh, God, God, he's a bit fucking, he's a bit weird, isn't it? You know,
yeah.
Pretend to be an old man, but she's pretending to be a little girl. So it wasn't really, it was just a bit of fun.
I think she was pretending to be an old lady.
Oh,
I think that voice was.
I thought it was a little girl, and you're an old man. Oh, no, that wouldn't be right.
No. I think that was an old lady, and he was pretending to be an old man, but a dirty old pervert, which is just like so telling.
Come over here.
Ooh.
God. So if you want to watch that, guys, go on YouTube.
Yeah. Oh, I'll put it on the Facebook page. I'll link it up on there.
Yeah, but not everyone uses Facebook.
Yeah, I suppose. But yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yes. So, despite his bizarre replies to her questions, Cheryl Bradshaw, who's the lady picking, she picked Al Carla for the date, but like I said, after chatting to him backstage, she refused to follow through, saying that she found him creepy. And a fellow contestant on the show described him as a very strange guy with bizarre opinions.
I thought you were saying a fellow contestant decided to go on a date with him.
Oh my God, no. A criminal profiler has speculated that Al Carla's murders after this time may have been linked to the rejection. On February the 13th, 1979, 15-year-old Monique Hoyt was hitchhiking in Pasadena. She was offered a ride by a young man who was kind and charming. He asked her to pose for photographs that would be submitted as entries to a competition, and she was flattered. She introduced herself, and he told her his name was Rodney Alcala and said he just needed to stop off at his house to pick up some more equipment.
I thought he didn't like that name, because he said before when the police had arrested him, he said, that was okay, that's not me, I'm Cheeseburger.
Yeah, well, I think he just says what he feels like he needs to say.
Okay.
I don't think...
believes in his words.
Yeah, like, he's just using his names, isn't he, to get away with shit.
Yeah.
By the time they arrived, however, it was too dark to take any photos, so they decided to spend the night at his place. In the morning, they drove out to the mountains outside Riverside County. They walked into the forest for a while, and Alcala took some photos of her fully clothed. She then agreed to be photographed in the nude. Alcala then said he wanted to take some goofy pictures of her, asking her to put her t-shirt back on and pull it over her face. She followed his directions, waiting for further instruction, then felt a heavy blow to her head.
Shit.
As she fell and before she passed out, she saw Alcala standing with a large tree branch in his hands. When she regained consciousness, she tried to remain calm, feigning that she was still passed out, so as to try and plan an escape. Alcala bit her vagina repeatedly.
What the fuck?
Vaginally raped her and sodomised her until she finally started screaming. Alcala stuffed her t-shirt into her mouth, telling her to shut up, and began to choke her until she passed out again. Sometime later, she woke up to find that her wrists and ankles had been bound, and Alcala was lying on the ground next to her, crying.
She is. That's not what you want to wake up to.
No, it really isn't. She decided to take advantage of his vulnerability, saying she'd like to spend more time with him, and rolled over to touch his arm. She does better than I would in that situation, though. At least she manages to, like, keep her shit together and, like, figure a way out of it, seeing that, you know, I think I'll just...
Well, that ends up being
I'll
a sort of...
scrap.
But it ends up being the ones that do end up...
get myself in trouble.
When these things happen, do kind of get away. It's the ones that are, oh, like, you know...
Yeah.
Try and manipulate them back.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
She told him not to tell anyone about what had happened and asked if they could go to his house. He untied her and she got up and got dressed. They drove to a gas station and he went to use the bathroom, Monique telling him she would wait in the car for him. As soon as he entered the bathroom, she ran to the motel that was next to the gas station and screamed at one of the guests to phone the police, telling them she'd been kidnapped and sexually assaulted. A couple took Monique into their room for safekeeping until the police arrived. Alcala heard the commotion, he ran to his car and sped off. Shortly after, the police arrived at the motel and took Monique to the station. She identified Alcala from the photographs the police showed her. Police took Alcala in for questioning and he remained calm throughout, telling them he was a parolee who had recently spent time in prison for marijuana possession. They asked him what he had been doing earlier that day and he totally stonewalled them, giving no information at all. They arrested him and charged him with sexual assault. After his arrest, police questioned him further about what had happened earlier. He said that Monique had consented to being tied up and to being photographed in the nude. He claimed she'd simulated sex acts and that he had stuffed her shirt in her mouth and strangled her to keep her quiet. Days later, Alcala appeared at a bail hearing and his bail was set at $10,000. His mother paid it as she assumed he was innocent, and a trial was scheduled for September that year.
Of course, mum would, because it's mum, isn't it? But it's...
Yeah, but you can only be so fucking blind, can't you?
Come on, he's been arrested, he's been in prison twice.
When he got paroled, he went to live with her as well. You know, she knows that he's had to register as a sex offender. She knows that he's been away. You can't be that blind that you think, even if it's
just
your child.
Ridiculous.
There's got to be a point, like we were saying, where do you draw the line? Obviously, we've both got kids anyway, and thinking on that, you know, if my son was doing that kind of shit, I would just go nuts. I'd be like, get the fuck out of here. You cannot do that shit. I'm not bailing your ass out.
No.
If you've done that shit and behaved in that way, you need to be inside. I wouldn't bail him out, not if he'd done that.
No, of course not.
We don't know.
10 fuck grand then was a bit, shit. Probably as well.
Yeah, totally. In April, he resigned from his job at the LA Times, deciding to open his own photographic studio. On June the 14th, 1979...
He still had a job at the LA Times?
He resigned.
He still had a job there. What the fuck?
I know.
How the fuck?
Because he's such a fucking sociopath that he just thinks that the shit he's doing doesn't matter and other people aren't going to be fussed by the shit that he's doing, you know, or that people won't find out about it.
Hmm.
You know, he thinks he's untouchable. You look at what's happened, you know, the first known attack obviously was Tali Shapiro, the little girl. Look what happened to him. You know, he got a fucking slap on the wrist, really. He went away for 2.5 years. He had his charges reduced to child molestation. And he tried to fucking asphyxiate her with an iron bar, an 8-year-old child. And he raped her. You know, so, like, he's probably going to be feeling like it's not that big of a deal. You know, whatever this is. Obviously, things, you know, he just gets months at a time in prison, so he's just kind of going you know, and probably just feeling like no one's really going to give a fuck,
yeah,
or feeling like no one's going to find out.
Yeah.
So on June the 14th, 1979, the body of Jill Parento, 21, was discovered inside her Burbank apartment after family and friends had reported to the police that they had been unable to contact her for a number of days. Detectives discovered that the glass had been removed from the door and the screen had been cut, as well as the bulb in the porch light had been loosened. Her naked body was laid on the bed, legs spread, and as far as they could tell, her attacker had caused massive trauma to her head, damaging her face, cheeks, teeth, and neck. The blankets, sheets, and a bathrobe were soaked in blood and left at the end of the bed, and a pair of torn and knotted nylon stockings were found next to her on the bed. An electric blanket had been placed under her body and the cord was wrapped around her neck. The autopsy showed that she had received a 6-inch scalp laceration as well as severe head trauma with a blunt object, and she had severe hemorrhaging in the area of her thyroid and larynx due to the force of the strangulation. She had bite marks and puncture wounds around her breasts and lacerations inside her vagina and anus. Once again, it was concluded that most of these injuries were inflicted while she was still alive, and the cause of death was determined to be strangulation.
Same again.
Yeah, same again. Vicious bastard, though, isn't he? He's fucking horrible.
Huh.
On July the 2nd, 1979, a forestry worker in the Los Angeles foothills found the decomposing remains of a human body. On July the 5th, LAPD officers arrived at the home of Mary Ann Samso, whose 12-year-old daughter Robin had been missing for 12 days. They had to tell her that she had been located, but it had taken them 3 days to identify her. The corpse was in such an advanced state of decomposition that police were unable to determine a cause of death. On July the 7th, police went to Alcala's mother's house, but he wasn't there, but his girlfriend, however that happened, Elizabeth Kelleher was. This was her description of Alcala. Rodney Alcala is an intelligent, well-mannered, pleasant, fun, outgoing, great individual. When asked if she was in love with him, she said yes.
Oh my God.
Fucking wipe the shit out of your eyes, woman. What is wrong with you? I bet she felt like a right fucking mug after all that shit came out about him.
Yeah.
I'd like to think I'd know.
Yeah.
In that situation, I'd like to think.
Would you know
that
if it's me?
Yeah, I reckon. I'm quite good at stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it's just crazy. How can you be that fucking blind? Ridiculous. She said they had bonded over their love of photography, and when asked if she'd seen Alcala's portfolio, in quotation marks, she said yes. She'd seen lots of pictures of young girls, but when questioned if she thought Alcala was capable of killing Robin Samso, she could see no reason why he would commit such an act. She said they had spent the weekend together in Northern California, close to the time of Robin's disappearance, but could not recall Alcala's whereabouts on June the 20th. The following day, on the 8th of July, Alcala told Elizabeth he wanted to move to Dallas. Convenient.
Hmm.
As there was a business opportunity there for him to own his own photography studio. He said that he would keep in touch with her and arrange for her to move there when he'd settled. On the 20th of July, Alcala rented a storage facility in Seattle, Washington, and dropped off some of his possessions, renting a room at a nearby motel for the night.
He's basically, he's just like, kidding spree, isn't it, really?
Yeah,
everything,
he knows.
Kidding is like his main hobby now, yeah. His main career,
yeah,
is a killer.
That's his focus.
All the other stuff is just, whatever.
That's his focus, you know, and obviously he's kind of aware that things are coming on top as well, because he's rented this storage facility, he's driven all the way to Seattle, you know, and rented this storage place to go and dump off a load of stuff. So I think he knows that he can't really keep that shit in his apartment. You know, whether he knows that things are coming on top or whether he's just being smart, I don't know.
Well, apart from premeditation...
Smart, in quotation
marks. Apart from being premeditation with murderers, obviously when they're prepping to kill someone or something like that, being a killer is very much living in the now, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're not bothering in the past. You're not kind of looking into the future, apart from the premeditated deaths you're going to possibly cause. But you're living in the now.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, like, if that's a thing that you're doing and that's a thing that you're enjoying, you've got to stop yourself from getting caught, so...
Yeah. So it's a weird thing. It's just literally like, this is all I care about right now. It's just this, right now, right here, me going after someone, and that's my next thing. It's like a lion. When's my next feed? Or like you say, a shark.
Hmm. Yeah, it's just kind of berserk, though. This is all happening in quite a short space of time, you know, really. Given the severity of the murders, he's clearly not feeling that need for him, you know. He's obviously not doing a murder and then going, oh, right, that's enough now, you know, I can chill for a bit.
Hmm.
Probably go off and do another one like...
And him,
he's just going, go, you know, and fucking bashing people's brains in.
And him, like Bundy, kind of sort of handsomely people who are very positive, very, like, got, like, confidence, all
that
sort of stuff. They could, if they didn't have charm, if they weren't killing people, they could probably make something of themselves and live a fairly comfortable life.
I'm sure he could do well.
He could probably get started actually doing it all right with photography. Or at least getting a work, even if his art's a bit shit.
Well, yeah, you know, obviously it's known that a lot of people in jobs of high power and stuff, and people who do, like, well, are psychopaths, aren't they? Because they don't give a shit about other people.
Mm.
They'll just make the money, you know, and they'll just go and not care who they're treading on.
I have just classed the serial killer as a proactive person. That's not really what we're saying. But I did literally just say, it's quite proactive, but I'm not a serial killer, isn't proactive. But in some ways, they are getting out there and doing it.
They are.
They
are doing their thing, but at the cost of other people.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
and if they could focus
the difference
that
between
energy...
Yeah.
Into something else.
Yes.
Imagine if it was to change it and it was actually to help people. Imagine that. Ted Bundy goes and reads stories to old folk in nursing homes.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh my God. Right. Okay, so next day he drove back to Los Angeles and said goodbye to Elizabeth, but didn't mention the storage rental or the drive to Seattle. On July the 24th, after detectives had examined the evidence, they decided that Alcala was the main suspect in their investigation. Go police!
Hooray.
They arrived at Alcala's mother's house at 7 a.m. to arrest him, and luckily he was still there, in bed, asleep. They took him in for questioning, and he claimed to be at a job interview at the time of Robin Samso's disappearance. He was, however, booked for murder, and this time his bail was set at $250,000.
Mummy's not coming to bail you out.
Yeah.
You're fucked.
Done it now, matey. Officers searched his mother's house and his Datsun for more evidence, and they found a receipt for Alcala's Seattle storage unit. The following items were collected as evidence from Alcala's mother's house: one pair of Japanese-made handcuffs, boxes of photos, pieces of rope, 8 magazines titled Young and Naked.
Why is there even a magazine called that?
I know. What is going
on? Don't provoke people, please.
Yeah, just don't even go there. One frizzy black wig, one leather bullwhip, one pair of pink knickers.
This is like a suitcase you don't want to get busted for at the airport, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a suitcase you don't ever want to get busted for anywhere.
Yeah.
Camera equipment, a briefcase containing a set of keys, an additional 1,200 photos, negatives and slides. The police soon discovered that Alcala had no alibi for the time in question and that he had recently been charged with rape and kidnapping. Alcala was unaware that the police had found the receipt for the storage unit and a search warrant had been issued. Two detectives flew to Seattle and, using the keys from Alcala's briefcase, they gained entry. They searched the locker for 3 hours, finding the following items: winter clothing, kitchenware, a red coin purse, a collection of earrings, boxes containing over 1,700 photographs, negatives and slides, including one marked Tally, VA Rape, and another marked Ode to New York by John Berger.
So the Tally, the VA, so that's that first victim.
Yeah.
But he didn't have the photographs of it, did he?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fuck.
He photographed everything.
Right.
He photographed everything.
So then, that obviously, the police had to go get the photos developed of the rolls and go through everything.
Yeah. So that's like what, about 3,000 photos, negatives and slides and stuff that they've collected all together from his mother's house and that storage facility.
Yeah, yeah.
At least nearly 3,000 pictures
to go through
that some poor bastard has had to go through.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking trauma.
Mm.
In 1980, he was tried, convicted and sentenced to death for Samso's murder.
Good.
Yeah, but the verdict was overturned by Californian Supreme Court it was overturned by the California Supreme Court because jurors had been improperly informed of his prior sex crimes. In 1986, after a second trial virtually identical to the first, except for the omission of prior criminal record history, he was again convicted and sentenced to death. While preparing their third prosecution in 2003...
The first one, when he was convicted to death, they overturned it because they found out he was a pedo, a sex offender.
Yeah.
They didn't want to send him to the death chair because he was a sex offender.
No, he was sentenced to death again.
Oh,
he was again convicted and sentenced to death, so it made no difference, like, taking into account his previous...
Right.
You know, they still sentenced him to death.
Yeah.
While preparing their third prosecution in 2003, Orange County investigators learned that Alcala's DNA, sampled under a new state law and over his objections, matched semen samples left at the rape murder scenes of two women in Los Angeles. Additional evidence, including another cold case DNA match in 2004, led to Alcala's indictment for the murders of 4 additional women.
Shit.
Jill Barkham, it's the ones I've spoken about, Barkham, Georgia Wickstead, Charlotte Lamb and Jill Parento.
Right.
A pair of earrings that had been found in Alcala's storage unit had been identified as Robin Samso's by her mother, and another pair had residue that matched Charlotte Lamb. During his incarceration, between the second and third trials, Alcala wrote and self-published a book titled You, the Jury, in which he claimed innocence in the Samso case and suggested a different suspect.
And in his mind, being such a sociopath, he would be right and everybody else is wrong.
Yeah, definitely. Really is. In 2003, prosecutors entered a motion to join the Samso charges with those of the other four charges. Alcala's attorneys contested it, but in 2006, the California Supreme Court ruled in the prosecution's favour, and in February 2010, Alcala stood trial on the five joint charges. For the third trial, Alcala elected to act as his own attorney. He took the stand in his own defence and for 5 hours played the roles of both interrogator and witness, asking himself questions, addressing himself as Mr. Alcala in a deeper than normal voice, and then answering them. During this self-questioning and answering session, he told jurors that he was at Knott's Berry Farm applying for a job as a photographer at the time of Robin Samso's disappearance. He showed the jury part of his 1978 appearance on The Dating Game in an effort to prove that the earrings found in Seattle belonged to him and not Samso.
How was that going to prove that?
So he was trying to say that he was wearing them when he wasn't even wearing earrings.
And that's not really good, showing that video.
No.
Is that just him trying to say, oh, I was on the dating show, that makes, look at me, they must have thought I was a good judge of character.
I would say so.
This might persuade them into...
Yeah, I would say something.
But not
like
with those
that.
Answers that
yeah,
we heard.
That, definitely. Yeah, definitely. That is not going to make anyone go, it's not
more,
him.
He's more fucking done it, I bet
anything. Yeah, I'd be like, guilty as fuck.
Yeah.
Alcala made no significant attempt to dispute the four added charges, other than to state that he couldn't remember killing any of the women. As part of his closing argument, he played the Arlo Guthrie song, Alice's Restaurant, in which the protagonist tells a psychiatrist that he wants to kill. And I'm going to play a little bit of that now, just so you can get an idea. I'm not going to play the whole thing, because it's like... 70s style song that just goes on for about 10-15 minutes. But I'll just play that bit that he played in the court.
Okay, cool. Let's take a listen.
Okay.
There, I said, shrink. I want to kill. You know, I want to kill. Kill. I want to see. I want to see blood and gore and guts and veins in my teeth. Eat dead, burnt bodies. I mean, kill. Kill! 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 And I started jumping up and down, yelling, kill! Kill!
Why on earth would you want to play that song to try and...
I know, it's
for
just
Jura.
Got no...
How many song...
It's not instilling confidence, is it? Or innocence.
All that's doing is showing that this person... Look at this person. He's an entertainer, and they're all laughing, and he's talking about killing. So even if I did do it, doesn't matter, does it?
Yeah.
I can't think of any other reason. He's obviously got some issues with the mind.
Yeah,
and should,
totally.
Should have
I'd
some
say
psychiatric help.
Yeah. Well,
I
don't know if there's any
too
help
past
for
it.
Him.
Too,
yeah.
Too far gone. Yeah. Okay.
After less than 2 days' deliberation, the jury convicted him on all 5 counts of first-degree murder. And a surprise witness during the trial was Tali Shapiro, Alcala's first known victim.
Hoof.
Her family moved her to Mexico, didn't they? And they didn't want to come back
because
for the first
now
trial.
She's older.
Yeah.
And she's gone, no, that fucker's going down.
Yeah.
And mum and dad, if you'd have let me fucking in the first place done this.
Yeah.
But then again,
well,
they were
she was like 8
her.
Years old, no, so yeah, her, you've got to do what's best for her, haven't you, really? And I can imagine that, like, if that
don't want any more trauma to your future.
Yeah,
child.
If that had happened to Ren, I'd be like, no.
Yeah, of course.
You know, way too small to be in the middle of that shit. But yeah, she's older now, so she came back for the trial.
Hmm.
In March 2010, Alcala was sentenced to death for a third time. Not getting away with this, like...
Why is he not... Why does he keep getting sentenced to death? Oh, because they just keep finding more charges.
Yeah.
While he's inside, more charges keep coming up. And they keep going, right, that's another one, sentenced to death again?
Yep. In March 2010, the Huntington Beach and NYPD released 120 of Alcala's photographs and asked for the public's help in identifying them, in case there were additional victims. Approximately 900 additional photographs could not be made public, police said, as they were sexually explicit. And like I said, I think that is still online, you know, obviously if you've got family members or whatever that you know were missing, maybe you could go take a look at it and see if you can help identify some of those people.
None
of the photos was unequivocally connected to a missing persons case or unsolved murder until 2013, when a family member recognised the photo of Christine Thornton, 28, whose body was found in Wyoming in 1982. As of July 2021, 110 of the original photos remain online to help with further identification. So, some additional associations, charges and convictions. After his 2010 conviction, New York authorities announced that they would no longer pursue Alcala because of his status as a convict awaiting execution. Nevertheless, in January 2011, a Manhattan grand jury indicted him for the murders of Cornelia Crilly, who was a TWA flight attendant, in 1971, and Ellen Hover in 1977. In June 2012, he was extradited to New York, where he initially entered not guilty pleas on both counts. In December 2012, he changed both pleas to guilty. On January the 7th, 2013, a Manhattan judge sentenced Alcala to an additional 25 years to life. In 2010, Seattle police named Alcala as a person of interest in the unsolved murders of Antoinette Whitaker, who was 13, in July 1977, and Joyce Gaunt, who was 17, and that was February 1978.
We haven't even talked about these cases.
No, these were all, and these, like, could these have all were been quite all recent.
Each traumatic event. So
yeah,
all
definitely. Them, you know. But yeah, they're saying that he's a person of interest for that. In March 2011, investigators in Marin County, California, announced that they were confident that Alcala was responsible for the 1977 murder of 19-year-old Pamela Jean Lamson, who disappeared after making a trip to Fisherman's Wharf to meet a man who had offered to photograph her. Her battered, naked body was found in Marin County near a hiking trail. In September 2016, Alcala was charged with the murder of 28-year-old Christine Ruth Thornton, who disappeared in 1977. And that was the lady who was recognised from the photographs by the family member.
Okay.
Her body was found in Sweetwater County, Wyoming, in 1982, but wasn't identified until 2015, when DNA supplied by Thornton's relatives matched tissue samples from her remains. Alcala admitted taking the photo, but not to killing the woman, who was around 6 months pregnant at the time. The 73-year-old was apparently too ill to make the journey from California to Wyoming to stand trial on the new charges, and he remains on death row in California, and he's 77 years old.
He's still in death row?
Still on death row.
Just get done.
I know, but like we've found with the others, you know, it takes so long. Death row is just like, are you ever really going to be executed, you know, or are you going to die of old age by the time it comes round?
So he's still alive?
Still alive, 77, on death row in California. And that's the story of Rodney Alcala.
Well, I hope he's not having a very good time.
Killer. I hope he's having a fucking shit time.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking...
But he's... He hasn't,
fuck
they,
that guy.
They haven't given him mental help, though.
No. Well, not so, that I know of.
He's probably still believing that he's right and everyone else is wrong.
Good luck to him.
More than likely.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for letting us know about this, gentleman.
That's all right, gentleman. No. Oh, scratch that, cross that out. The word you're looking for, piece of shit.
This wanker.
Yeah, this disgusting...
Horrible just thing.
Yeah, fuck that guy. Not get in the bin.
Dear. Yeah. Ugh. Serial killers. Very, very, very similar to Ted Bundy. So I'm going to say to you, have a little look at... Maybe watch a Ted Bundy movie or something.
Yeah.
Oh, there's Netflix did a quite good thing on him because they had a lot of audio tape stuff of him talking and things. And
okay.
That's quite interesting to, you know, that's quite a good series.
Yeah. Let's
try that maybe.
Yeah, I'll give it to Luke.
Then I'll lend you that Ted Bundy movie.
Yeah, that'd
Savini
be cool.
Effects, but it's a bit full on though because it's Savini and his effects are so good. Yeah, but it comes down to this actually happened to these women, so when you see it like really graphically, it kind of gives it a bit worse than the average horror movie, which is a fiction. You know,
yeah.
So, but yeah, well, thank you very much, listeners, for that. Now, next time, because, you know, we like to have a little roller coaster with this show.
Yeah, definitely.
We go up, we go down.
It gets a bit rough. We do a funny. Well, not even a funny, really, is it? It's not going to be funny.
But we don't go so hard.
What the fuck moments in the next one.
Anus slicing and whatnots.
No, but
biting vaginas.
Saying that, what is coming up next time? It's still traumatic, isn't it? I am so looking forward to this episode. I know, like, I've spoken about having a monkey as a pet before, but I'm not going to go to this extreme. So next episode, we're going to be looking at people who have kept wild animals as pets.
And the shit that's happened.
So, yeah, what I was alluding to was obviously that chimp fiasco.
Face rippers.
Honestly, that fucking haunts me. It haunts me. I can't even imagine how fucking terrifying that must have been.
Are we going to do the 911 call?
So, yeah, we will be doing the 911 call next episode. So I have to put a warning on that. See, there's me going, oh, we'll do a funny episode. It's not funny at all. It's fucking trauma.
Mm.
But there will be some what the fuck moments, I'm sure, from like people just keeping random wild animals in places where they shouldn't be kept.
Yes.
And, yeah, we will be doing the 911 call from the chimp attack. So yeah, there will be a warning on that next week, and we'll do you a little warning before we play it as well, so you can skip ahead for a couple of minutes if you don't want to hear it, because it's bad.
Yeah, okay.
And I'll try and keep my shit together while we listen to it and not start blubbing and kind of go, oh my god.
Yeah, okay. Anyway,
that's coming up next episode. Yeah. Wild animals as pets.
Thank you for coming along and listening to us. Next time, microphones will be back to normal. And I will have a bit more of a better voice thing going on.
Yeah. You gussets done you well tonight with your little pop shield tights.
I've had to make this makeshift pop shield, which is interesting.
Chatting to the gusset.
I'm using some tights and a roll of tape.
All right, ingenuity wins the day.
Yeah, we've done it. Thanks very much to the listeners coming along with us. Please check out deadboltfilms.com, as well. I make some films with a little crew of mine. I've got another podcast, a podcast on Haunted Hill, where we talk about horror films. And you, my dear, what do you have?
Oh, I've got my crochet as well, and can come along and check that out. Just finished up some rather nice crochet butt plugs the other day.
The cutest butt plugs I've ever seen.
They seem to be going down pretty well.
And probably going up fairly well.
Yeah, well, not intended for personal use. Come on. But yeah, you can come along and check my stuff out. You can find me on Facebook and Instagram as Foxy's Fantastic Fabrications. And you'll find a link to my Etsy shop there as well. So we've got loads of stuff up.
And you've got a sale on right this moment.
No, that finished.
Finished. There's no point in you promoting that then.
No.
Thanks very much for coming along. Listen to us, please. Like, subscribe, do all that jazz.
Yeah, leave tell us a little other review people. If you could as well.
That'd be good. Tell other people about the show as well. Yeah. And remember tonight, everybody, lock your doors, lock your windows.
Locking doors.
Oh. You don't know who's out there, who's looking in the window having a little
bloody
wank.
Creep. And if some dude tells you he wants to take pictures of you, just tell him to fuck off.
Yeah. No,
honestly, it's probably not going to end that well. Especially if it's real creepy as well. Like, go with your instincts.
And if you're on a dating show, really get some questions in there, which actually sneaky questions, so you can actually figure out the mentality of the person you might be potentially going on a date with.
But I'm sorry, if anyone goes, get over here, and starts heavy breathing out, you just walk away.
Oh, yeah.
Unless you like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well,
people do.
Yeah, people do.
People do.
Only if it's between consenting peoples, though.
Only consenting people. And that's the last thing we're going to say. Good night, everybody.
See you next time.